This is Scott Becker with the Becker Group C-Suite Women's Leadership Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by somebody who's built her own practice from scratch, Marjorie Jacobs, deals with a lot of high-level executives in her practice and what she does, and we'll get some of her thoughts on it today. Marjorie, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you, first, Scott, for having me. As you said, my name is Marjorie Jacobs. I am an attorney. I only see clients for mediation purposes, and I have been doing mediation exclusively for the last 18 plus years.
Marjorie, I'm going to ask you two sets of questions, one about mediation themselves, and then second about how you built your practice and business. And the first sets of questions around mediation itself. Are there certain things that make mediations more difficult or easier? Any thoughts on that? And then I'd love to ask you whether it makes a difference if you have high net worth, senior executives, how that plays into things.
Sure. So mediation is an opportunity for parties to come to the table and really be creative and thoughtful about a settlement. So the idea is that whether they're high net worth or they are not, it really is more dependent on the personalities involved. Some people would think that the high net worth people would be easier because there's more to divide. And oftentimes those parties become more positional. And what makes it more difficult is when one party has earned all the income and the other party has not contributed in the same level. And therefore, there's a disparity. We often have the high income earner feeling resentful about the process. That would hold true whether it was a high income net worth person or just a regular wage earner.
When do you see mediations go well? Does it depend on their counsel? Does it depend on their personal animosity towards each other? What are factors that make it go well?
Mediation goes best when the parties are motivated to come to the table and really reach a settlement. That's when mediation goes the best. When a party is represented by an attorney who is really coaching them and preparing them for the mediation, that is also extremely helpful. Mediation really, as I said earlier, is an opportunity to think out of the box, be more creative, come up with a solution that may work for this particular circumstance and may not work for anybody else. So we're really looking at what are the needs and interests of the parties and how can we help the whole family move forward rather than one individual.
And you've been doing this a long time now, 18 years since you dedicated yourself solely to doing mediations. To be a good mediator, you've got to be able to deal with both sides in a very even-handed way. Does it take uncommon empathy to be a good mediator? What are some of the qualities it takes? You have to be a good listener, a good talker. What drives being great versus not so great as a mediator?
Well, number one is patience, for sure. You have to really be a great listener, and you have to really have a tremendous amount of patience. Parties are coming to the table. They are not at their best. There's a lot of emotion that is presented. People are very worried, concerned about their future, and really being an empathetic listener and helping them understand that in the end, they really will be okay. Is extremely important. Also, having a strong financial acumen is incredibly important when you're dealing with the high net worth executives, et cetera, because there's a lot of complicated financials, and being able to recognize what those issues are is extremely important in the process.
Let me ask you another question. In this sort of lore of discussions of divorce law and divorces, it is common to hear somebody say, well, that divorce lawyer was brutally difficult. They caused more trouble. They didn't help the process, or something different. You're a professional in the area. and not bound by so much the emotion that goes into these things as others are, what's your perception of divorce lawyers? Are they like all other lawyers? Some are good, some are bad. Are they inclined to stir things up? What's your perception of the field that you see, you know, in divorce lawyers?
Without being overly critical, I do often think that divorce attorneys take on the personality and the persona of the client they're representing. So if you have a very high emotional client that is very needy, angry, and vengeful, oftentimes we find that the attorneys take on the personality of that particular client, which is not helpful in the mediation process. There are some great divorce attorneys that are really like-minded, that are looking to keep the parties out of court. We all know nothing good happens when the parties go to court and a judge is imposing a settlement versus you actually coming to a settlement on your own. Litigation is an expensive process, so there are attorneys that do love litigation because that's the bread and butter of their practice and they will make more money. But there are excellent attorneys and not so excellent attorneys.
Like everything else, and what you said I think is very, very true, they take on typically a natural attorney who's doing their job will take on their client sort of role and position. It's where you end up with a problem is a client that is not so hell-bent for fighting, but the attorney pushes them towards fighting or vice versa. It's when you have somebody that it's almost if they take on the position of the client, well, that's kind of what a lawyer should do. But or maybe they should do more reality testing and so forth, but when they actually push the client in directions the client might not have been inclined to go is where you start to have this disconnect and some horrible outcomes. Let me ask you a different question or a different set of questions, Marjorie. You started your own practice. How did you get going in business? Was it hard to get started? Was it hard to get clients? And at the time you started, mediation wasn't as common as it is today. How did you get going and how hard was it?
So it's a great question because I come at this in a very different way than most people who practice in this area. I was a healthcare lawyer. I worked for two large law firms and then ultimately went in-house to the American Hospital Association. In my work there during the Clinton years, I was on a variety of congressional and senatorial committees and was tracking different issues as it related to hospitals and healthcare organizations, one of them being alternative dispute resolution. We had a national task force. We spoke all over the country. We wrote a book, but I was not trained to actually do mediation. And I convinced my boss at the time that perhaps she should send me to mediation training. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking that this might be a good segue for me to make a career change. I had two very, very young children. Traveling to DC every week was just not in the cards any longer. And I was looking to do something different. When I ultimately finished all my mediation trainings and somebody said to me, you really should take a family law mediation training, I sort of chuckled because I never even took family law in law school. I ultimately took that class and realized that I could change one family at a time and have a greater impact than I certainly was having in my work on the Hill. So I started with a partner and we did a lot of networking, met a lot of people, did a lot of volunteer mediations to get a lot of experience. And ultimately, in my practice, which is different from most other mediators, I will not take anybody that's not represented by counsel. I do not want the parties to think I'm giving them legal advice. And as I said earlier, I think it's so important that they are prepared for mediation because people negotiate best when they have real information. So every time I did a mediation, there were two attorneys on either side. And if it was successful, the attorneys would then send me another case and there'd be another new attorney on the case. And ultimately that was how my practice grew.
And what you found was, I mean, there's a number of things you said that I thought were just great advice. One is something that people are scared to do today They're cynical about it. It's you started off by sometimes doing things for free to gain market presence, to gain experience. And I just love that as being willing to sort of boot up and do some stuff for free to get going, to learn something and become valuable. The other thing you said that I loved was that you didn't take on any mediation without them both being advised. And my guess is you find well-advised clients are much easier to deal with ultimately than poorly advised clients. So if they're well-advised, they start to have their attorneys tell them, yes, here's the guardrails of where things work within, versus you trying to tell them that and them not necessarily trusting you or thinking that you really like one party versus the other. How much of your job becomes therapist to work people through problems and problem solve versus hardcore business discussion, business negotiations?
When it comes to the issues related to the children, I do find myself being placed in the position of a quote-unquote therapist. Unfortunately, I'm not trained as a therapist, so I can only go by practical experience and help guide them. And I do work with a number of therapists that help prepare me to prepare the clients, so that's very helpful. I really believe in a team approach, so whomever we need to bring into a mediation to help the clients gain the confidence and knowledge to help them make the best decisions, I'm all for that. So whether it's a therapist, a child advocate, a financial neutral, we do a lot of work in business valuation. So we are often hiring independent business valuators to help us understand businesses and their true value in a neutral way, rather than each party having to, hire their own. So yes, we work with all the professionals that help us and help the clients make the best decisions.
Let me ask you another question. I know that you're involved in outside activities. Those outside activities, they're labors of love. Are they also helpful for networking for business or not so much? And any thoughts on the outside activities that you love the most?
I love anything that has to do with education. So I do sit on a board of a major university, which I love. I would not say that helps me professionally in any way, but helps me personally. And I enjoy the work that I do with them. I'm in a number of other legal professional networking groups, and I enjoy meeting the people. I'm often the person that is more helpful to the others than they are actually to me. So it's an interesting question. I'm also in meetings most of the day, all day, so it is hard for me to do the networking that I think others have more of a luxury and are able to participate in.
Well, it's I've watched your practice grow over the years, and I know and I hear from people how successful you've been and how well it's gone. And I know part of that is just this great mix of intelligence and personal skills and the fair way that you treat everybody that you know. So congratulations. I'm going to ask you one last question. Any advice to someone who's going through a divorce negotiation? I mean, as a participant, a husband, a wife, what's your sort of overriding advice for them?
Number one is park the emotion at the door. This is really going to end up being a business deal, and it's very hard when it's personal and there's a lot of emotion involved in all of the decision making. The process typically starts with people being very emotional, and that slows the process down. Once we're able to park the emotion, things go much more quickly. Don't come in with a preconceived idea as to how things are going to work out. That would be my number two, because it never works out the way people think they will, and then they only set themselves up to be disappointed. And thirdly, I think the most important thing is to not discuss your particular situation with everyone else that's gotten divorced, because people only tell you what they want to tell you, and you really do not have the whole full picture. to assess whether you should have that same deal that your friend down the street had. This is about your
talk
family.
About that. Okay. Talk about that for a moment, because you hear so much of that in any divorce situation, you know, people talking about others. Well, they got a better deal than me. They got a worse deal. I can't believe this. I can't believe that. Could you believe this? How much of that, together with the emotions, have to be parked at the door?
100%. I mean, I'm constantly telling clients, please do not discuss this with your neighbors, your friends. Everybody thinks they're the smartest person in the room and they've gotten divorced, or their friend has gotten divorced and they know what your outcome should be, but they really don't understand the particulars of your circumstance or your situation. And it's detrimental to the process. And it's only, once again, setting the parties up to be disappointed or ill-informed, I guess, would be a better way of saying it.
No, I think that's exactly right. Well, Marjorie, you've done a magnificent job of building a practice and of providing counsel to people in sometimes their, one of their most stressed states in life. So I congratulate you on what you've built and what you've done. So many of the pieces of the advice resonate with me. You know, try and put the kids first. Try and leave the emotions at the door. Make sure everybody's represented. Don't be taking curbside advice from your friends who have had one divorce or one situation, even your friends that have had seven divorces. You really want to keep focused on your own situation. So, Marjorie, it's a great pleasure to visit with you. I appreciate it very much, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks so much for including me.